among many, Christian Scientists and Roman Catholics. Catholics? You mean Lourdes? I had in mind the miracle of transubstantiation. I can't judge that subtle a miracle. As for Christian Scientists, if I break a leg, I want a sawbones. Then watch where you put your feet. Jubal growled, don't bother me. Wouldn't think of it. I don't want a classmate of William Harvey. Harvey could reduce a fracture. Yeah, but how about his classmates? Jubal, those cases you cited may be miracles, but Mike offers splashy ones. He's either an expert illusionist or an amazing hypnotist. He might be both. Or he smoothed the bugs out of closed-circuit stereo vision so that it cannot be told from reality. How can you rule out real miracles, Ben? It's not a theory I like. Whatever he used, it was good theater. Once the lights came up, and he was a black-maned lion, as stately as a guardian for library steps, and little lambs wobbling around him, the lion just blinked and yawned. Sure, Hollywood can tape such effects, but I smelled lion. However, that can be faked, too. Why insist on fakery? Damn it, I'm trying to be judicial. And don't lean over backwards. Try to emulate Anne. I'm not Anne. I wasn't judicial at the time. I just enjoyed it in a warm glow. Mike did a lot of gung-ho illusions, levitation and such. Patty slipped away toward the end after whispering to me to stay. Michael just told them that any who do not feel ready for the next circle should now leave, she told me. I said I'd better leave. She said, oh, no, dear, you're ninth circle. Stay seated. I'll be back. And she left. I don't think anybody chickened out. This group was seventh circlers supposed to be promoted. But I didn't notice as lights came up again. And there was Jill. Jubal, it did not feel like stereovision. Jill picked me out and smiled at me. Oh, if an actor looks directly at camera, his eyes meet yours no matter where you're seated. But if Mike had it smoothed out this well, he should patent it. Jill was in an outlandish costume. Mike started intoning something, partly in English, stuff about the mother of all, the unity of many, and started calling her a series of names. And with each name, her costume changed. Ben Caxton came quickly alert when he saw Jill. He was not fooled by lighting and distance. This was Jill. She looked at him and smiled. He half listened to the invocation while thinking that he had been convinced that the space behind the man from Mars was surely a stereo tank. But he would swear that he could walk up those steps and pinch her. He was tempted to, but it would be a crummy trick to ruin Mike's show. Wait till Jill was free. Sibylle. Jill's costume suddenly changed. Isis. Again. Frigg. G. Devil. Ishtar. Mariam. Mother Eve. Mater Deo Magna. Loving and beloved. Life undying. Caxton stopped hearing. Jill was Mother Eve, clothed in glory. Light spread. And he saw that she was in a garden beside a tree on which was twined a great serpent. Jill smiled, reached up and smoothed the serpent's head, turned back and opened her arms. Candidates moved forward to enter the garden. Patty returned and touched Caxton on the shoulder. Ben, come, dear. Caxton wanted to stay and drink in the glorious vision of Jill. He wanted to join that procession. But he got up and left. He looked back and saw Mike put his arms around the first woman in line, turned to follow Patricia, and failed to see the candidate's robe vanish as Mike kissed her, did not see Jill kiss the first male candidate, and his robe vanished. We'll go around, Patty explained, to give them time to get into the temple. Oh, we could barge in, but it would waste Michael's time getting them back in the mood, and he does work so very hard. Where are we going? To pick up Honeybon, then back to the nest. Unless you want to take part in the initiation, but you haven't learned Martian yet, you'll find it confusing. Well, I'd like to see Jill. Oh, she said to tell you she's going to duck upstairs and see you. Down this way, Ben. A door opened. Ben found himself in that garden. The serpent raised her head as they came in. There, dear, Patricia said. You were Mama's good girl. She unwrapped the boa and flaked it down into a basket. Duke brought her down, but I have to arrange her on the tree and tell her not to wander off. You were lucky, Ben. A transition to eighth happens very seldom. Ben carried Honeybun and learned that a 14-foot snake is a load. The basket had steel braces. When they reached the top, Patricia stopped. "Put her down, Ben." She took off her robe and handed it to him, then draped the snake around her. "This is Honeybun's reward for being a good girl. She expects to cuddle up to Mama. I've got a class almost at 1, so I'll carry her until the last moment. It's not a goodness to disappoint a snake. They're like babies. They can't grok in fullness." They walked 50 yards to the entrance of the nest proper. Ben took off her sandals and socks after he removed his shoes. They went inside, and Patty stayed with him while Ben shucked down to shorts, stalling, trying to make up his mind to discard shorts, too. He was now fairly certain that clothing inside the nest was as unconventional and possibly as rude as hobnailed boots on a dance floor. The warning on the exit door, the absence of windows, the womb-like comfort of the nest, Patricia's lack of attire, plus the fact that she had suggested that he could do likewise, all added up to domestic nudity. Patricia's behavior he discounted from a feeling that a tattooed lady might have odd habits about clothing. But coming into the living room, they passed a man headed out toward the baths and little nests, and he wore less than Patricia by one snake and many pictures. He greeted them with, "Thou art God," and went on. There was more evidence in the living room. A body sprawled on a couch. A woman. Caxton knew that many families were casually naked in their homes, and this was a family, all water brothers. But he was unable to make up his mind between the urbanity of removing his symbolic fig leaf and the certainty that if he did, and strangers came in who were dressed, he would feel silly. Hell, he might blush. "What would you have done, Jubal?" Harshaw lifted his eyebrows. "Are you expecting me to be shocked, Ben? The human body is often pleasing, frequently depressing, and never significant, per se. So Mike runs his household along nudist lines. Shall I cheer or must I cry? Damn it, Jubal, it's easy to be Olympian, but I've never seen you take off your pants in company. Nor will you. But I grok you were not motivated by modesty. You were suffering from a morbid fear of appearing ridiculous, a neurosis with a long pseudo-Greek name. Nonsense. I wasn't certain what was polite." "Nonsense to you, sir. You knew what was polite, but were afraid of looking silly. Or feared being surprised in the gallant reflex. But I grok Mike has reasons for this custom. Mike always has reasons. Oh, yes. Jill told me." Ben was in the foyer, his back to the living room and his hands on his shorts, having told himself to take the plunge, when arms came snugly around his waist.
"Ben, darling, how wonderful!"
Then Jill was in his arms, her mouth warm and greedy against his, and he was glad he had not finished stripping. She was no longer Mother Eve. She was wearing a priestess robe. Nevertheless, he was happily aware that he held a double arm full of live, warm, and gently squirming girl.
"Golly," she said, breaking from the kiss. "I've missed you, you old beast. Thou art God."
"Thou art God," he conceded. "Jill, you're prettier than ever."
"Yes," she agreed. "It does that. What a thrill it gave me to catch your eye at the blow-off."
"Blow-off?"
"Jill means," Patricia put in, "the end of the service where she is all mother. Mater Deo Magna. Kids, I must rush." "Never hurry, Patty Cake."
"I gotta rush so I won't have to hurry.
Ben, I must put Honey Bun to bed and go down and take my class. So kiss me goodnight, please."
Ben found himself kissing a woman wrapped in a giant snake. He tried to ignore Honey Bun and treat Patty as she deserved. Pat then kissed Jill.
"Night, dears."
She left, unhurriedly.
"Ben, isn't she a lamb?"
"She is, although she had me baffled at first."
"I grok. Patty baffles everybody, because she never has doubts. She automatically does the right thing. She's much like Mike. She's the most advanced of any of us. She ought to be high priestess. But she won't take it because her tattoos would make some duties difficult, be a distraction, and she doesn't want them taken off."
"How could you take off that much tattooing? With a flensing knife, it would kill her."
"Not at all, dear. Mike could take them off, not leave a trace, and not hurt her. But she doesn't think of them as belonging to her. She's just their custodian. Come, sit down. Dawn will fetch supper. I must eat while we visit, or I won't have a chance until tomorrow. Tell me what you think." Dawn tells me you saw an outsider's service.
Yes.
Well?
Mike, Caxton said slowly, could sell shoes to snakes.
Ben, I crock something is bothering you.
No, he answered. Not anything I can put my finger on.
I'll ask you again in a week or two. No hurry.
I won't be here in a week.
You have columns on the spike?
3, but I shouldn't stay that long.
I think you will. Then you'll phone in a few, probably about the church. By then you will grok to stay much longer.
I don't think so.
Waiting is, until fullness. You know it's not a church?
Patty said something of the sort.
Let's say it's not a religion. It is a church in every legal and moral sense. But we're not trying to bring people to God. That's a contradiction. You can't say it in Martian. We're not trying to save souls. Souls can't be lost. We're not trying to get people to have faith. What we offer is not faith, but truth. Truth they can check. Truth for here and now. Truth, as matter of fact, is an ironing board and as useful as bread. So practical that it can make war and hunger and violence and hate as unnecessary as, well, as clothes in the nest. But they have to learn Martian. That's the hitch. Finding people honest enough to believe what they see, willing to work hard. It is hard to learn the language it must be taught in. This truth can't be stated in English any more than Beethoven's 5th can be.
She smiled.
But Mike never hurries. He screens thousands, finds a few, and some trickle into the nest, and he trains them further. Someday Mike will have us so thoroughly trained that we can start other nests. Then it can snowball. But there's no hurry. None of us is really trained. Are we, dear?
Ben looked up at Jill's last words, was startled to find, bending over to offer him a plate, a woman he recognized as the other high priestess.
Dawn, yes, that was right.
His surprise was not reduced by her being dressed in Patricia's fashion, minus tattoos.
Dawn smiled. Your supper, my brother Ben. Thou art God.
Thou art God. Thanks.
She kissed him, got plates for herself and Jill, sat down on his right and began to eat.
Ben was sorry that she did not sit where he could see her better. She had the best attributes associated with goddesses.
No, Dawn agreed. Not yet, Jill, but waiting will fill. For example, Jill continued, I took a break to eat, but Mike hasn't eaten since the day before yesterday, and won't until he's not needed. Then he'll eat like a pig, and that will carry him as long as necessary. Besides that, Dawn and I get tired, don't we, sweet?
We surely do. But I'm not tired, Jillian. Let me take this service and you stay with Ben. Give me that robe.
You're crazy in your little pointy head, my love. Ben, she's been on duty almost as long as Mike. We can take a long stretch, but we eat when we're hungry and sometimes we need sleep. Speaking of robes, Dawn, this was the last in the 7th temple. I meant to tell Patty she'd better order a gross or two.
She has.
I should have known.
This one seems tight.
Jill wiggled in a fashion that disturbed Ben.
Are we putting on weight? A little.
Good, we were too skinny. Ben, you notice that Dawn and I have the same figure? Height, bust, waist, hips, weight, everything, not to mention coloration. We were almost alike when we met. Then with Mike's help, we matched exactly. Even our faces are more alike. But that comes from doing and thinking the same things. Stand up and let Ben look at us, dear.
Dawn put her plate aside and did so,
in a pose that reminded Ben of Jill, more than resemblance justified. Then he realized it was the pose Jill had been in when she stood revealed as Mother Eve.
Jill said with her mouth full,
See, Ben, that's me.
Dawn smiled.
A razor's edge of difference, Jillian.
Pooh, I'm almost sorry we'll never have the same face. It's handy, Ben, for us to be alike. We must have 2 high priestesses. It's all 2 can do to keep up with Mike.
And besides, she added, Dawn can buy a dress and it fits me too. Saves me the nuisance of shopping.
I wasn't sure, Ben said slowly, that you wore clothes, except these priestess things.
Jill looked surprised.
How could we go out dancing in these? That's our favorite way of not getting sleep. Sit down and finish your supper. Ben has stared at us long enough. Ben, there's a man in that transition group who's a perfectly dreamy dancer, and this town is loaded with nightclubs. Dawn and I have kept the poor fellow up so many nights that we've had to help him stay awake in language classes. But he'll be all right. Once you reach 8th circle, you don't need much sleep. What made you think we never dressed, dear?
Ben blurted out his dilemma. Jill looked wide-eyed, barely giggled, stopped at once.
I see. Darling, I'm wearing this robe because I have to gobble and get. Had I grokked that was troubling you, I would have chucked it before I said hello. We're so used to dressing or not according to what we do that I forgot that it might not be polite. Sweetheart, wear those shorts, or not, exactly as suits you.
Just don't fret. Jill smiled and dimpled.
Reminds me of the time Mike tried a public beach. Remember, Dawn?
I'll never forget. Ben, you know how Mike is. I had to teach him everything. He couldn't see any point to clothes until he grokked. To his great surprise, that we aren't invulnerable to weather. Body modesty isn't a Martian concept, couldn't be. Mike grokked clothes as ornaments only after we started experimenting with costuming our acts. But while Mike always did what I told him to, whether he grokked it or not, you can't imagine how many little things there are to being human. We take 20 years or more to learn them. Mike had to learn almost overnight. There are still gaps. He does things not knowing that it isn't how a human behaves. We all teach him. All but Patty, who is sure that anything Michael does is perfect. He's still grokking clothes. He groks there a wrongness that keeps people apart, gets in the way of letting love cause them to grow closer. Lately, he's grokked that you need a barrier with outsiders. But for a long time, Mike wore clothes only when I told him to. And once I failed to tell him. We were in Baja, California. It was when we met, or re-met, Dawn. Mike and I checked in at night at a beach hotel, and he was so anxious to grok the ocean that he let me sleep next morning and went down by himself for his first encounter with the sea. Poor Mike. He got to the beach, threw off his robe, and headed for the water, looking like a Greek god and just as unaware of conventions. And the riot started, and I came awake fast and rushed down to keep him out of jail. Jill got a faraway look.
He needs me now. Kiss me goodnight. Ben, I'll see you in the morning.
You'll be gone all night?
Probably. It's a fairly big transition class.
She stood up, pulled him to his feet, and went into his arms. Presently, she murmured,
Ben, darling, you've been taking lessons.
Phew!
Me, I've been utterly faithful to you. In my own way. The same way I've been to you. I wasn't complaining.
I just think Dorcas has been helping you practice kissing.
Some, maybe. Nosy.
The class can wait while you kiss me again. I'll try to be Dorcas.
Be yourself.
I would, anyway.
Self.
Mike says that Dorcas kisses more thoroughly, groks a kiss more than anyone.
Quit chattering. She did, then sighed.
Transition class, here I come, glowing like a lightning bug. Take care of him, Dawn.
I will.
And kiss him right away and see what I mean.
I intend to.
Then be a good boy and do what Dawn tells you.
She left, not hurrying, but running. Dawn flowed up against him, put up her arms. Jubal cocked an eyebrow.
Are you going to tell me that at that point you went chicken?
I didn't have much choice. I cooperated with the inevitable. Jubal nodded.
You were trapped. Whereupon the best a man can do is try for a negotiated peace.
Chapter 32.
Jubal, Caxton said earnestly, I wouldn't say a word about Dawn. I wouldn't tell any of this if it weren't necessary for explaining why I'm worried about them. All of them. Duke and Mike and Dawn, as well as Jill and Mike's other victims. Mike has them fascinated. His new personality is powerful, cocky, and too much super salesman, but very compelling. And Dawn is compelling in her own way. By morning, I was lulled into thinking everything was all right. Weird, but jolly.
Ben Caxton awakened, not knowing where he was. It was dark. He was lying on something soft. Not a bed. The night came back in a rush. The last he clearly remembered was lying on the soft floor of the innermost temple, talking quietly and intimately with Dawn. She had taken him there. They had immersed, shared water, grown closer. Frantically, he groped around, found nothing.
Dawn!
light swelled to dimness.
Here, Ben.
Oh, I thought you had gone.
I didn't intend to wake you.
She was wearing, to his sudden disappointment, her robe of office.
I'ma start the Sunriser's outer service. Jillian isn't back. As you know, it was a big class.
Her words brought back things she had told him last night, things which had upset him, despite her gentle explanations, and she had soothed him until he found himself agreeing. He still didn't grok at all, but yes, Jill was busy with rites as High Priestess, a task or happy duty that Dawn had offered to take for her. Ben felt that he should be sorry that Jill had refused. But he did not feel sorry. Dawn, do you have to leave? He scrambled to his feet, put his arms around her.
I must, Ben, dear. Dear Ben.
She melted against him.
Right now?
There is never, she said softly, that much hurry.
The robe no longer kept them apart. He was too bemused to wonder what had become of it. He woke a second time, found that the little nest lighted when he stood up. He stretched, discovered that he felt wonderful, looked around for his shorts. He tried to recall where he had left them, and had no recollection of taking them off. He had not worn them into the water. Probably beside the pool. He went out and found a bathroom. Some minutes later, shaved, showered, and refreshed, he looked into the innermost temple, failed to find his shorts, and decided that somebody had put them in the foyer where everybody kept streetwear. Said to hell with it, and grinned at himself for having made an issue out of wearing them. He needed them here in the nest, like a second head. He didn't have a trace of a hangover, although he had had more than several drinks with Dawn. Dawn didn't seem affected by liquor, which was probably why he had gone over his quota. Dawn, what a gal. She hadn't even seemed annoyed when, in a moment of emotion, he had called her Jill. She had seemed pleased. He found no one in the big room and wondered what time it was. Not that he gave a damn, but he was hungry. He went into the kitchen to see what he could scrounge. A man looked around. Ben! Well, hi, Duke. Duke gave him a bear hug. Gosh, it's good to see you. Thou art God. How do you like your eggs? Thou art God. Are you the cook? Only when I can't avoid it, Tony does most of it. We all do some, even Mike, unless Tony catches him. Mike is the world's worst cook. Duke went on breaking eggs. Ben moved in. You look after toast and coffee. Any Worcestershire sauce? You name it, Pat's got it. Here. Duke added, I looked in on you a while ago, but you were snoring. I've been busier, you have, ever since you got here. What do you do, Duke? Well, I'm a deacon. I'll be a priest someday. I'm slow. Not that it matters. I study Martian. Everybody does. And I'm the fix-it boy, same as for Jubal. Must take a gang to maintain this place. Ben, you'd be surprised how little it takes. You must see Mike's unique way of dealing with the stopped-up toilet. I don't have to play plumber much. Aside from plumbing, 9/10 of the gadgetry is in this kitchen, and it's not as gadgeted as Jubal's. I thought you had some complicated gadgets for the temples. Lighting controls, that's all. Actually, Duke grinned, my most important job is no work. Fire warden. Huh? I'm a deputy fire warden, examined and everything. And same for sanitary and safety inspector. We never have to let an outsider go through the joint. They can attend outer services, but they never get farther unless Mike gives an upcheck. They transferred food to plates and sat down. Duke said, you're staying, Ben? I can't, Duke. So? I just came for a visit, too. Went back and moped for a month before I told Jubal I was leaving. Never mind, you'll be back. Don't make any decisions before your water sharing tonight. Water sharing? Didn't Dawn tell you? I don't think so. I should let Mike explain. No, people will be mentioning it all day. Sharing water, you grok. You're first called. First called? Dawn used that expression. Those who became Mike's water brother without learning Martian. Others ordinarily do not share water and grow closer until they pass the eighth circle. By then, they are beginning to think in Martian. Shuck, some of them know more Martian than I do. It's not forbidden. Nothing is forbidden to share water with someone who isn't ready for eighth circle. Hell, I could pick up a babe in a bar, share water, take her to bed, and then bring her to the temple. But I wouldn't. That's the point. I would never want to. Ben, I'll make a flat-footed prediction. You've been in bed with some fancy babes. Some. I know damn well you have. But you will never again crawl in with one who is not your water brother. A year from now, you tell me. Now Mike may decide that someone is ready before reaching even seventh circle. One couple Mike offered water when they entered third circle, and now he's a priest and she's a priestess. Sam and Ruth. Haven't met them. You will. But Mike is the only one who can be certain that soon. Very occasionally Dawn or Patty will spot somebody, but never as far down as third circle, and they always consult Mike. Not that they have to. Anyhow, into eighth circle, and sharing and growing closer starts. Then ninth circle, and the nest itself. And that's the transition service we mean when we say sharing water, even though we share water all day long. The whole nest attends, and the new brother becomes forever part of the nest. In your case, you already are. But we've never held the service, so tonight everything is pushed aside to welcome you. They did the same for me. Ben, it's the most wonderful feeling in the world. I still don't know what it is, Duke. It's lots of things. Ever been on a real luau? The kind the cops raid and usually ends in a divorce or two? Well, yes. Brother, you've only been on Sunday school picnics. That's one aspect. Have you ever been married? No. You are married. After tonight, there will never be any doubt in your mind. Duke looked happily pensive. Ben, I was married before. And at first it was nice, and then it was steady hell. This time I like it all the time. Shucks, I love it. I don't mean just that it's fun to shack up with a bunch of bouncy babes. I love them. All my brothers, both sexes. Take Patty. Patty mothers us. I don't think anybody gets over needing that. She reminds me of Jubal, and that old bastard had better get down here and get the word. My point is that it is not just that Patty is female. Oh, I'm not running down tail. Who is running down tail? A contralto voice interrupted. Duke swung around. Nah, me, you limber Levantine whore. Come here, babe, and kiss your brother Ben. Never charged for it in my life, the woman denied as she glided toward them. Started giving it away before anybody told me. She kissed Ben carefully and thoroughly. Thou art God, brother. Thou art God. Share water. Never thirst. Don't mind Duke. From the way he behaves, he must have been a bottle baby. She kissed Duke even more lingeringly while he patted her ample fundament. She was short, plump, brunette to swarthiness, and had a mane of heavy blue-black hair almost to her waist. Duke, did you see a ladies' home journal when you got up? She took his fork and started eating his scrambled eggs. Good. You didn't cook these, Duke. Ben did. Why would I want a ladies' home journal? Ben, stir up a couple of dozen more and I'll scramble them in relays. There's an article I want to show Patty, dear. Okay, agreed Ben. Don't get any ideas about redecorating this dump and leave some of that for me. You think us men can do our work on mush? Tut, tut, Dukey darling. Water divided is water multiplied. Ben, Duke's complaints never mean anything. As long as he has enough women for two men and food for three, he's a perfect lamb. She shoved a forkful into Duke's mouth. Quit making faces, brother. I'll cook you a second breakfast. Or will it be your third? Not even the first yet. You ate it. Ruth, I was telling Ben about how you and Sam pole-vaulted to ninth. He's uneasy about the sharing water tonight. She pursued the last bite on Duke's plate, moved over and started preparations to cook. Duke, I'll send you out something other than mush. Take your coffee and skedaddle. Ben, I was worried too. But don't you be, dear. Michael does not make mistakes. You belong here or you wouldn't be here. You're going to stay? I can't. Ready for the first installment? Pour them in. You'll be back. Someday you'll stay. Duke is correct. Sam and I pole-vaulted. It was too fast for a middle-aged, prim and proper housewife. Middle-aged? Ben, one bonus of the discipline is that as it straightens out your soul, your body straightens out too. That's a matter in which Christian scientists are right. Notice any medicine bottles in the bathrooms? No, there aren't any. How many people have kissed you? several. As a priestess, I kiss more than several. But there's never so much as a sniffle in the nest. I used to be the sort of whiny woman who was never quite well and given to female complaints. She smiled. Now I'm more female than ever. But I'm 20 pounds lighter, years younger, and have nothing to complain about. I like being female. As Duke flattered me, a Levantine whore, and unquestionably more limber. I sit in lotus position when I'm teaching, whereas it used to be all I could do just to bend over. But it did happen fast. Ruth went on. Sam was a professor of Oriental languages. He started coming because it was the only way to learn Martian. Strictly professional. He wasn't interested in the church. I went along to keep an eye on him. I was jealous, even more possessive than the average. So we worked up to third circle, Sam learning rapidly and myself grimly studying because I didn't want him out of my sight. Then boom, the miracle happened. We began to think in it, a little. And Michael felt it and had a stay after service one night. And Michael and Jillian gave us water. Afterwards I knew that I was all the things I despised in other women, and I despised my husband for letting me, and hated him for what he had done. All this in English, with the worst parts in Hebrew. So I wept and moaned and made myself a stinking nuisance to Sam, and couldn't wait to share and grow closer again. After that, things were easier, but not easy as we were pushed through the circles as fast as possible. Michael knew we needed help and wanted to get us into the safety of the nest. When it came time for our sharing water, I was still unable to discipline myself without help. I wanted to enter the nest, but wasn't sure I could merge with 7 other people. I was scared silly. On the way over, I almost begged Sam to turn around and go home. She looked up, unsmiling but beatific, a plump angel with a big spoon in one hand. We walked into the innermost temple and a spotlight hit me, and our robes were whisked away. And they were in the pool calling to us in Martian to come share the water of life. And I stumbled in and submerged and haven't come up since, nor ever want to. Don't fret, Ben. You'll learn the language and acquire the discipline, and you'll have loving help all the way. You jump in that pool tonight. I'll have my arms out to catch you. All of us will, welcoming you home. Take this to Duke and tell him. And I stumbled in and submerged and haven't come up since, nor ever want to. Don't fret, Ben. You'll learn the language and acquire the discipline, and you'll have loving help all the way. You jump in that pool tonight. I'll have my arms out to catch you. All of us will, welcoming you home. Take this to Duke and tell him I said he was a pig, but a charming one, and take this for yourself. Oh, you can eat that much. Give me a kiss and run along. Ruthie has work to do. Ben delivered the kiss, the message, and the plate. He found Jill, apparently asleep on one of the couches. He sat down facing her, enjoying the sweet sight and thinking that Dawn and Jill were more alike than he had realized. Jill's tan was unmarked, and just the shade of Dawn's. Their proportions were identical. In rest, even their features were more alike. He looked up from a bite and saw that her eyes had opened. She was smiling.
Thou art God, darling,
and that smells good. You look good. I didn't mean to wake you. He moved across and sat by her, put a bite into her mouth. My own cooking, with Ruth's help. And good, too. You didn't wake me. I was just lazing until you came out. I haven't been asleep all night. Not at all. Not a wink. But I feel grand. Just hungry. That's a hint. So he fed her. She let him do so, not stirring. Did you get any sleep? She asked presently. Some. How much sleep did Dawn get? As much as 2 hours? Oh, more than that. Then she's all right. 2 hours does as much as 8 used to. I knew what a sweet night you were going to have, both of you, but I was worried that she might not rest. Well, it was a wonderful night, Ben admitted. Although I was surprised at the way you shoved her at me.
Shocked, you mean? I know you, Ben.
I was tempted to spend the night with you myself. I wanted to, dear. But you arrived with jealousy sticking out in lumps. I think it's gone now. Yes?
I think so. Thou art God.
I had a wonderful night, too. Free from worry by knowing you were in good hands. The best hands. Better than mine.
Oh, never, Jill.
So? I grok a few lumps still. But we'll wash them away.
She sat up, touched his cheek, said soberly,
before tonight, dear. Because of all my beloved brothers, I would not have your sharing water be less than perfect.
Ben stopped.
Waiting is, she said, and reached toward the end of the couch. It looked to Caxton as if a pack of cigarettes jumped into her hand.
Glad to change the subject, he said. You've picked up some sleight of hand, too.
Jill smiled. Nothing much. I am only an egg, to quote my teacher.
How did you do that?
Why, I whistled to it in Martian. First you grok a thing, then you grok what you want it to.
Mike! She waved. We're over here, dear.
Coming.
The man from Mars came straight to Ben, pulled him to his feet.
Let me look at you, Ben. Golly, it's good to see you.
It's good to see you, and to be here.
What's this about 3 days? 3 days indeed.
I'm a working man, Mike.
We'll see. The girls are all excited getting ready for your welcome tonight. Might just as well shut down. They won't be worth a damn.
Patty is rescheduled, Jill told Mike. Dawn and Ruth and Sam are taking care of what's necessary. Patty sloughed the matinee, so you're through for the day.
That's good news.
Mike sat down, pulled Jill's head into his lap, pulled Ben down, put an arm around him, and sighed. He was dressed as Ben had seen him in the outer meeting. Smart tropical business suit.
Ben, don't take up preaching. I spend night and day rushing from one job to another, telling people why they must never hurry. I owe you, along with Jill and Jubal, more than anyone on this planet. Yet this is the first time I've been able to say hello. How have you been? You're looking fit. Dawn tells me you are fit.
Ben found himself blushing.
I'm okay. That's good. Carnivores will be on the prowl tonight. I'll grok close and sustain you. You'll be fresher at the end than at the start. Won't he, little brother?
Yes, agreed Jill. Ben, Mike can lend you strength. Physical strength, not just moral support. I can do it a little.
Mike can really do it.
Jill can do it a lot.
Mike caressed her.
Little brother is a tower of strength to everybody. Last night she certainly was.
He smiled down at her, then sang.
You'll never find a girl like Jill, no, not one in a billion. Of all the tarts who ever will, the willingest is our Jillian. Isn't that right, little brother?
Pooh, answered Jill, obviously pleased, covering his hand and pressing it to her. Dawn is exactly like me, and every bit is willing.
But Dawn is downstairs interviewing the possibles out of the tip. She's busy. You ain't. That's an important difference. Isn't it, Ben?
Could be.
Caxton was finding their behavior embarrassing, even in this relaxed atmosphere. He wished that they would knock off necking or give him an excuse to leave. Mike went on cuddling Jill while keeping an arm around Ben's waist. And Ben was forced to admit that Jill encouraged him. Mike said very seriously,
Ben, a night like last night, helping a group to make the big jump to Eighth Circle gets me terribly keyed up. Let me tell you something out of the lessons for Sixth. We humans have something that my former people don't even dream of. I must tell you how precious it is, especially how precious I know it to be, because I have known what it is not to have it. The blessing of being male and female. Man and woman created he them, the greatest treasure we who are God ever invented. Jill?
Beautifully right, Mike. And Ben knows it is truth. But make a song for Dawn, too, darling.
Okay. Ardent is our lovely Dawn. Ben grokked that in her glance. She buys new dresses every morn, but never shops for pants. Okay.
Jill giggled. Did you tune her in?
Yes, and she gave me a Bronx cheer with a kiss behind it for Ben. Say, isn't there anybody in the kitchen? I just remembered I haven't eaten for a couple of days, or years, maybe.
I think Ruth is, Ben said, trying to stand up.
Mike pulled him down.
Hey, Duke, see if you can find somebody who'll fix me a stack of wheat cakes as tall as you are and a gallon of maple syrup.
Sure, Duke answered. I'll do it myself.
I'm not that hungry. Find Tony. Or Ruth.
Mike pulled Ben closer and said,
Ben, I grok that you are not entirely happy.
Huh? Oh, I'm all right.
Mike looked into his eyes.
I wish you knew the language, Ben. I can feel your uneasiness, but I can't see your thoughts.
Mike?
Jill said. The man from Mars looked at her, then looked back at Ben and said slowly,
Jill just now told me your trouble, Ben, and it's a thing I've never been able to grok in fullness.
He looked worried and hesitated almost as long as when he was learning English.
But I grok that we can't hold your sharing water tonight. Waiting is.
Mike shook his head.
I'm sorry, but waiting will fill.
Jill sat up. No, Mike, we can't let Ben leave without it. Not Ben.
I do not grok it, little brother,
Mike said reluctantly. A long pause followed, silence more tense than speech. At last, Mike said doubtfully to Jill,
You speak rightly?
You will see.
Jill got up suddenly and sat down on Ben's other side, put her arms around him.
Ben, kiss me and stop worrying.
She did not wait, but kissed him.
Ben did stop worrying, was lulled into a sensuous glow that left no room for misgivings.
Then Mike tightened the arm he still had around Ben's waist and said softly,
We grok closer. Now, Jill?
Now, right here at once. Oh, share water, my darlings.
Ben turned his head and was snatched out of euphoria by utter surprise. Somehow the man from Mars had rid himself of every stitch of clothing. Chapter 33
Well, said Jubal, did you accept their invitation?
Huh? I got out of there fast, grabbed my clothes, ignored the sign, jumped into the bounce tube with my arms full.
You did?
I think if I were Jill, I would be offended.
Caxton turned red.
I had to leave, Jubal.
Then what?
Why, I put on my clothes, found I'd forgotten my bag, and didn't go back. In fact, I left so fast I darn near killed myself. You know how the ordinary bounce tube?
I do not.
Uh-huh. Well, if you don't dial it to lift, you sink slowly like cold molasses. But I didn't sink, I fell. 6 stories. When I was about to splash, something caught me. Not a safety net, some sort of field. Scared me silly on top of everything else.
Put not your faith in gadgets. I'll stick to stairs and when unavoidable, elevators.
Well, the bugs aren't out of that gadget. Duke is safety inspector, but whatever Mike says is gospel to Duke. Mike's got him hypnotized. Hell, he's got them all hypnotized. When the crash comes, it'll be worse than any faulty bounce tube. Jubal, what can we do? I'm worried sick.
Harshaw jutted out his lips.
What aspects did you find disquieting?
Huh? All of it.
So, you gave me to think that you enjoyed your visit, up to the point where you behaved like a scared rabbit.
So I did. Mike had me hypnotized, too.
Caxton looked puzzled. I might not have snapped out of it if it hadn't been for that odd thing at the last. Jubal, Mike was sitting by me, his arm around me. He couldn't possibly have taken his clothes off.
Jubal shrugged.
You were busy. Probably wouldn't have noticed an earthquake.
Oh, piffle, I don't close my eyes like a schoolgirl.
How did he do it?
I can't see his relevancy. Or are you suggesting that Mike's nudity shocked you?
I was shocked, all right.
When your own arse was bare, come, sir.
No, no. Jubal, do I have to draw a diagram? I simply have no stomach for group orgies. I almost lost my breakfast.
Caxton squirmed. How would you feel if people started acting like monkeys in a cage in the middle of your living room?
Jubal fitted his finger together.
That is the point, Ben. It was not my living room. You go into a man's house, you accept his household rules. That's a universal rule of civilized behavior.
You don't find such behavior shocking?
Ah, you raise another issue. Public displays of rut I find distasteful, but this reflects my early indoctrination. A large part of mankind do not share my taste. The orgy has a very wide history. But shocking, my dear sir, I am shocked only by that which offends me ethically.
You think this is just a matter of taste?
Nothing more. And my taste is no more sacred than the very different taste of Nero. Less sacred. Nero was a god. I am not.
Well, I'll be damned.
Possibly, if damnation is possible. But, Ben, This wasn't public.
Huh?
You told me this group was a plural marriage, a group theogamy, to be technical. Therefore, whatever took place, or was about to take place, you were mealy-mouthed, was not public but private. Ain't nobody here but just us gods. So how could anyone be offended?
I was offended.
Your apotheosis was incomplete. You misled them. You invited it.
Me? Jubal, I did nothing of the sort.
Oh, rats. The time to back out was when you got there. You saw at once that their customs were not yours, but you stayed. Enjoyed the favors of one goddess. Behaved as a god toward her. You knew the score, and they knew you knew. Their error lay in accepting your hypocrisy as solid coin. No, Ben. Mike and Jill behaved with propriety. The offense lay in your behavior.
Damn it, Jubal, you twist things. I did get too involved, but when I left, I had to. I was about to throw up.
So you claim reflex. Anyone over the emotional age of 12 would have clamped his jaws and walked to the bathroom, then returned with some acceptable excuse after things cooled down. It was not reflex. Reflex can empty the stomach. It can't choose a course for feet, recover chattels, take you through doors and cause you to jump down a hole. Panic, Ben. Why did you panic?
Caxton was long in replying. He sighed and said,
I guess when you come down to it, I'm a prude.
Jubal shook his head.
A prude thinks that his own rules of propriety are natural laws. That doesn't describe you. You adjusted to many things that did not fit your code of propriety, whereas a true blue prude would have affronted that delightful tattooed lady and stomped out. Dig deeper.
All I know is that I'm unhappy over the whole thing.
I know you are, Ben, and I'm sorry.
Let's try a hypothetical question. You mentioned a lady named Ruth. Suppose Jillian had not been present. Assume that the others were Mike and Ruth and that they offered you the same shared intimacy.
Would you have been shocked?
Huh? Well, yes, it's a shocking situation. I think so, even though you say it's a matter of taste.
How shocking? Nausea? Panic flight?
Caxton looked sheepish.
Damn you, Jubal. All right, I would just have found an excuse to go out to the kitchen or something, then left as soon as possible.
Very well, Ben. You have uncovered your trouble.
I have.
What element was changed?
Caxton looked unhappy. At last, he said,
You're right, Jubal. It was because it was Jill. Because I love her.
Close, Ben. But not dead center.
Eh?
Love is not the emotion that caused you to flee. What is love, Ben?
What? I'll come off it. Everybody from Shakespeare to Freud has taken a swing at that. Nobody has answered it yet. All I know is it hurts.
Jubal shook his head.
I'll give you an exact definition. Love is that condition in which the happiness of another person is essential to your own.
Ben said slowly,
I'll buy that, because that's the way I feel about Jill.
Good. Then you are asserting that your stomach turned and you fled in panic because of a need to make Jill happy.
Hey, wait a minute. I didn't say,
or was it some other emotion?
I simply said...
Caxton stopped.
Okay, I was jealous. But Jubal, I would have sworn I wasn't. I knew I had lost out. I had accepted it long ago. Hell, I didn't like Mike the less for it. Jealousy gets you nowhere.
Nowhere one would wish, certainly. Jealousy is a disease. Love is a healthy condition. The immature mind often mistakes one for the other, or assumes that the greater the love, the greater the jealousy. In fact, they're almost incompatible. One emotion hardly leaves room for the other. Both at once can produce unbearable turmoil. And I grok that was your trouble, Ben. When your jealousy reared its head, you couldn't look it in the eye, so you fled.
It was the circumstances, Jubal. This hands-around harem upsets the hell out of me. Don't misunderstand me. I would love Jill if she were a two-peso whore, which she is not. By her lights, Jill is moral.
Jubal nodded.
I know. Jillian has an invincible innocence that makes it impossible for her to be immoral.
He frowned.
Ben, I am afraid that you, and I, too, lack the angelic innocence to practice the perfect morality those people live by.
Ben looked startled. You think that sort of thing is moral? I meant that Jill doesn't know she is doing wrong. Mike's got her hornswoggled. And Mike doesn't know it's wrong either. He's the man from Mars. He didn't get a fair start. Jubal frowned.
Yes, I think what those people, the entire nest, not just our kids, are doing, is moral. I haven't examined details, but... Yes, all of it. Bacchanalia, unashamed swapping, communal living, an anarchistic code, everything.
Jubal, you astound me. If you feel that way, why don't you join them? They want you. They'll hold a jubilee. Dawn is waiting to kiss your feet and serve you. I wasn't exaggerating.
Jubal sighed.
No. 50 years ago, but now, Ben, my brother, the capacity for such innocence is no longer in me. I've been too long wedded to my own brand of evil and hopelessness to be cleansed in their water of life and become innocent again. If I ever was.
Mike thinks you have this innocence. He doesn't call it that. In full measure now. Dawn told me, speaking ex officio.
Then I would not disillusion him.
Mike sees his own reflection.
I am, by profession, a mirror.
Jubal, you're chicken.
Precisely, sir. But my worry is not over their morals, the dangers to them from outside.
Oh, they're in no trouble that way.
You think so? If you dye a monkey pink and shove him into a cage of brown monkeys, they'll tear him to pieces. Those innocents are courting martyrdom.
Aren't you being rather melodramatic, Jubal?
Jubal glared.
If I am, sir, does that make my words less weighty? Saints have burned at stakes ere this. Would you dismiss their holy anguish as melodrama?
I didn't mean to get your back up. I simply meant that they aren't in that sort of danger. After all, this isn't the Dark Ages.
Jubal blinked.
Really? I hadn't noticed the change.
Ben, this pattern has been offered to a naughty world many times, and the world has always crushed it.
The Oneida colony was much like Mike's nest. It lasted a while, but out in the country, not many neighbors.
Oh, take the early Christians. Anarchy, communism, group marriage, even that kiss of brotherhood. Mike has borrowed a lot from them.
If he picked up that kiss of brotherhood from them, I would expect men to kiss men.
Ben looked sheepish.
I held out on you.
But it's not a pansy gesture.
Nor was it with the early Christians. Do you think I'm a fool?
No comment.
Thank you. I wouldn't advise anyone to offer the kiss of brotherhood to the pastor of some boulevard church today. Primitive Christianity is no more. Over and again, it's been the same sad story. A plan for perfect sharing and perfect love. Glorious hopes and high ideals. Then persecution and failure.
Jubal sighed again.
I've been fretting about Mike. Now I'm worried about them all.
How do you think I feel? Jubal, I can't accept your sweetness and light theory. What they are doing is wrong.
It's that last incident that sticks in your craw.
Not entirely.
Mostly. Ben, the ethics of sex is a thorny problem. Each of us is forced to grope for a solution he can live with in the face of a preposterous, unworkable, and evil code of so-called morals. Most of us know the code is wrong. Almost everybody breaks it. But we pay Danegeld by feeling guilty and giving lip service. Willy-nilly, the code rides us, dead and stinking, an albatross around the neck. You too, Ben. You fancy yourself a free soul and break that evil code. But faced with a problem in sexual ethics new to you, you tested it against the same Judeo-Christian code. So automatically your stomach did flip-flops, and you think that proves you're right and they're wrong. Faw! I'd as lief use trial by ordeal. All your stomach can reflect is prejudice trained into you before you acquired reason.
What about your stomach?
Mine is stupid too, but I don't let it rule my brain. I see the beauty of Mike's attempt to devise an ideal ethic and applaud his recognition that such must start by junking the present sexual code and starting fresh. Most philosophers haven't the courage for this. They swallow the basics of the present code, monogamy, family pattern, continence, body taboos, conventional restrictions on intercourse, and so forth, then fiddle with details, even such piffle as discussing whether the female breast is an obscene sight. But mostly they debate
how we can be made to obey this code, ignoring the evidence that most tragedies they see around them are rooted in the code itself, rather than in failure to abide by it. Now comes the man from Mars, looks at this sacrosanct code with a fresh viewpoint, and rejects it. I don't know the details of Mike's code, but it clearly violates laws of every major nation and would outrage right-thinking people of every major faith, and most agnostics and atheists, too. Yet this poor boy, Jubal, he is not a boy. He's a man. Is he a man? This poor ersatz Martian is saying that sex is a way to be happy. Sex should be a means of happiness. Ben, the worst thing about sex is that we use it to hurt each other. It ought never to hurt. It should bring happiness, or at least pleasure. The code says, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. The result? Reluctant chastity, adultery, jealousy, bitterness, blows, and sometimes murder, broken homes and twisted children, and furtive little passes degrading to woman and man. Is this commandment ever obeyed? If a man swore on his own Bible that he refrained from coveting his neighbor's wife because the code forbade it, I would suspect either self-deception or subnormal sexuality. Any man virile enough to sire a child has coveted many women, whether he acts or not. Now comes Mike and says, there's no need to covet my wife. Love her. There's no limit to her love. We have everything to gain and nothing to lose but fear and guilt and hatred and jealousy. The proposition is incredible. So far as I recall, only pre-civilization Eskimos were this naive, and they were so isolated that they were almost men from Mars themselves. But we gave them our virtues, and now they have chastity and adultery just like the rest of us. Ben, what did they gain? I wouldn't care to be an Eskimo. Nor I. Spoiled fish makes me bilious. I had in mind soap and water. I guess I'm a feat. Me too, Ben. I was born in a house with no more plumbing than an igloo. I prefer the present. Nevertheless, Eskimos were invariably described as the happiest people on earth. Any unhappiness they suffered was not through jealousy. They didn't have a word for it. They borrowed spouses for convenience and fun. It did not make them unhappy. So who's loony? Look at this glum world around you, then tell me, did Mike's disciples seem happier or unhappier than other people? I didn't talk to them all, Jubal, but yes, they're happy. So happy they seem slap happy. There's a catch in it somewhere. Maybe you were the catch. How? It's a pity your tastes canalized so young. Even 3 days of what you offered would be something to treasure when you reach my age. And you, you young idiot, let jealousy chase you away. At your age, I would have gone Eskimo. Why, I'm so vicariously vexed that my only consolation is the sour certainty that you will regret it. Age does not bring wisdom, Ben, but it does give perspective. And the saddest sight of all is to see far behind you temptations you've resisted. I have such regrets. But nothing to the whopper you will suffer. Quit rubbing it in. Heavens, man. Or are you a mouse? I'm trying to goad you. Why are you moaning to an old man when you should be heading for the nest like a homing pigeon? Hell, if I were even 20 years younger, I'd join Mike's church myself. Lay off, Jubal. What do you really think of Mike's church? You said it was just a discipline. Yes and no. It is supposed to be truth with a capital T, as Mike got it from the Martian old ones. The old ones, eh? To me, they're hogwash. Mike believes in them. Ben, I once knew a manufacturer who believed that he consulted the ghost of Alexander Hamilton. However, damn it, why must I be the devil's advocate? What's biting you now? Ben, the foulest sinner of all is the hypocrite who makes a racket of religion. But we must give the devil his due. Mike does believe, and is teaching the truth as he sees it. As for his old ones, I don't know that they don't exist. I simply find the idea hard to swallow. As for his Thou Art God creed, it is neither more nor less credible than any other. Come Judgment Day, if they hold it, we may find that Mumbo Jumbo, the god of the Congo, was big boss all along. Oh, for heaven's sake, Jubal. All names belong in the hat, Ben. Man is so built that he cannot imagine his own death. This leads to endless invention of religions. While this conviction by no means proves immortality to be a fact, questions generated by it are overwhelmingly important. the nature of life, how ego hooks into the body, the problem of ego itself, and why each ego seems to be the center of the universe. The purpose of life, the purpose of the universe, these are paramount questions. Ben, they can never be trivial. Science hasn't solved them.